Hello, listeners. You're once again very welcome to this, the podcast of the Irish Wood and Interiors Network. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.iwin.ie. Today, it's my great pleasure to speak with Mr. Paul Flanagan, who is the owner and CEO of Flanagan Fittings. Paul has kindly agreed to discuss with me some of the history of his business. He personally is second generation, to discuss some of his own personal challenges and some of the changes over the time that he has been involved in it. So listen, Paul Flanagan, thank you so much for agreeing to speak to me today.
Yep, thank you very much for inviting me. I genuinely appreciate the invitation.
Well, certainly delighted to hear from you. And you're going to tell us a bit about yourself and your company. So we'll start off. You might give us, the listeners, you know, a bit of company background about Flanagan Fittings.
Okay, well, the company was technically started in 1974, but we tend to use 1978 as the more formal, or 75, I should say, the more formal launch date. It was started by my mother and father, and we started off selling edge banding machines and fixtures and fittings, and slowly but surely the company evolved into, you know, a much bigger company selling more fittings for kitchens and for the furniture industry.
So did your mother and father then start off sort of in a kind of a general, as a lot of people do in business, trying to figure out what works, and then ended up kind of specializing in a particular area?
Yes, what happened was my father was working for one of our competitors, and he left to go out on his own, start his own business. He ended up with the edge banding because a deal that he had looked at fell through in terms of certain fittings. Several years later, that deal rematerialized, and he was then able to expand completely into, you know, the kitchen and bedroom industry. And my mother was supporting him there all the way through.
Yeah, that's what they say behind every great man is a great woman. Isn't that the song?
That's true, you know.
Well, tell us this though. So you're a second generation. So, you didn't get into the hot seat until a little later on. So, what age were you when you got involved? And, you know, what kind of positions have you held within the company?
Oh, okay. Well, technically, I probably was working in the company from I was about 12.
Okay.
Child labor, every summer, and I worked there constantly, and I worked there constantly throughout college. And when I finished my degree in marketing, I joined the company full time in around 1990 as a sales rep out on the road. I did that for 10 years. And at that point, my father, when I joined in 1990, my father had already stepped out of the company due to health reasons. And there was somebody else running the business. I'll be honest, I was a little bit frustrated with how he was running the business because I could see the potential that was out there in the industry for us to grow, but that didn't seem to be happening. Eventually, 1999, he left the company, and I was shortly thereafter appointed managing director. And that's when the company kind of exploded, because it was 10 years of me having seen all the potential that was out in the industry and realizing that there's a lot of products that we could be selling. So as a result, when I took over, I just implemented all the policies that I taught that I wanted to do throughout the entire time I was a salesperson.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, this is every battle when you're a second generation is you take the ship, and sometimes you decide to steer it in a slightly different direction. But on that, the fact that you have the background and the knowledge, and obviously that you didn't start in the hot seat, is vital, I think, to have a broader understanding before you take over, you know.
Yeah.
But just tell us this before we keep talking about you. Tell us about the business in terms of the types of industries and who you supply at the minute.
Well, originally we would have been completely supplying kitchen and bedroom fittings. As the company evolved, we still have certain products that are specifically for those industries, but there are other products. Say, for example, we've sold some lift fittings into the fit out of an ocean liner. Then we have certain types of very special application hinges that get used an awful lot in customized furniture with special angles and things like that. But 80% of the product still goes into the kitchen, furniture, bedroom industry. But the other 20%, you can find it in anywhere that there's wood, some of our fittings could be used.
Well, just to tell us about that with the ocean liner and the lift. Is this the case of somebody came up to you and said, can you do a fitting for this? Or you know what happens? Somebody comes up to you in business and they ask you, can you do X, Y, or Z? And you kind of have to nearly say yes, because otherwise it's your reputation on the line as to whether you can deliver on the next thing. So if you keep saying no to things, I mean, how did that come about?
Well, essentially what we do when we bring in our product range, we bring in essentially every option that you can get for that product range. So the idea is that it doesn't make a difference if it's a very niche application or it's a more straightforward application. We will have a solution there. And this solution in question was to do with the storage of life jackets, where there was no handles put on because of the space confinements within the ship. And essentially, they were just touch to open, you know, for the use with the life jackets.
Okay, very good. It's strange the kind of things that come up going from kitchens to life jackets. You don't need a life jacket very often in the kitchen unless possibly you're a very bad chef or something.
Yeah.
So just apart from the challenge of dealing with different requests from business and things and you know that kind of thing, what would be some of the biggest challenges that you've faced so far in your career?
I think the biggest one was in 2008, the financial crash. We were expanding at a rate of about 25% per year from the year 2000 up until the end of 2007. And then we had made the decision to purchase Falcon House in Dublin Airport Logistics Park, which was a very big financial undertaking from the point of view of the company. Because the entire industry collapsed, it wasn't like we could sell our old buildings. So we took out a very big loan to mortgage to buy this building. And then within 2 years, our turnover had dropped by 47% because of the financial crash. And we obviously had this big debt that we had to service. And one of the biggest challenges at the time was the fact that I had to let some staff go. And, you know, it wasn't that they had done anything wrong. It was circumstances beyond our control, beyond their control, but we had to cut back. So we had to lose a few salespeople who, thankfully, some of them have gone on within the industry and are still in the industry and doing well. And we had to let go a few warehouse people. So that was a big challenge. Also, at the time, the banks were being extremely difficult in terms of when we moved in here, we had accelerated payments to pay off the mortgage sooner rather than later. And we were also on the equivalent of a tracker mortgage. And I could see financially we were struggling. So I said, okay, we bring back our payments back to regular payments. And the bank immediately decided that they wanted to change the tracker to a standard interest rate. So that was suddenly going to cost us more money again. Now, thankfully, we got that resolved because they were not allowed to do that. But it was, as I say, 2008, 2008 to about 2011 was very difficult times for the company. Thankfully, we've bounced back. Recently, about 2 years ago, we were putting on a 6,000 square foot extension to the back of the buildings for warehousing, which was going to create about an extra 1,000 pallet spaces. And as soon as we start doing that building, COVID hit. So I've kind of said to people, if you ever hear of me buying a building or doing a building expansion, panic, because something bad is about to happen.
You'll give us a call if you're planning on buying a building or doing an expansion.
I'm not doing it again.
So we can all be warned not to do anything just in case. So just in terms of the industry overall, okay, so you've been involved since you were 12 and now you're the CEO. So how much has the landscape changed since you entered the industry?
Ooh, the biggest thing I would say would be storage. When I started with the company, you would have found in a kitchen, you would have found maybe a single drawer pack. In wardrobes, you would find open shelves. And in furniture that was in living rooms, it would basically just be hinged units. So you had this situation where everyone was bending down, trying to get into the back of the cabinet to find things, you know, finding stuff that was out of date for years in a blind corner unit. And what actually happened is we started to introduce this concept of wider drawers into the industry. And that proved fairly difficult at the beginning because the door manufacturers did not want to offer the full width of drawer fronts, I should say. So in some cases, you'd have a door supplier offering an 800 mil wide one, another one would be offering 1,000, another one would be offering 900, just as individual options. Eventually that changed so that they're now all stocking all the different widths. Then what happened is we started introducing corner solutions that would take care of stuff hidden in blind corners. When I started, we would have sold about 6 pieces of them in a year. Within about 6 years, we were up with the old magic corner system to shifting about 1,000 pieces a year. So the industry just completely changed in terms of better access into the cabinets. Then what happened was full extension became a standard. So everything, when it opened up, you were getting better access for the end user. And then eventually soft close became standard across everything. But you just see it now in the industry that one of my customers was manufacturing a cabinet for a person who had a big collection of vinyl records. And like that now, they were getting the full extension runners to make sure that they came out all the way so that the LPs were not damaged. And then they put a lock on it, so when it was in the open position, it wasn't moving about. So, but people didn't have those kind of solutions years ago. It was just, you open a door, there was a shelf behind it, and everything was just thrown in. Now everything comes out to the end user.
Yeah, no, and it's amazing when you think that it's not something that we even think of nowadays. You know, I mean, I have one of these corner units where the whole thing comes out of the corner, so you can see everything that you've got. You know,
yeah.
So probably the old John West tuna packets won't be living in the cabinet for as long.
No, hopefully not.
No, but it's fantastic. But the soft closed doors, though, unfortunately, I'm not a fan of. You can't slam them when you're annoyed.
Yeah. No, trust me, I'm aware of that myself. You know?
Yeah, no, good stuff. Yeah. Well, listen, and your time coming up, have you ever gotten any very good advice from somebody? And indeed, have you ever gotten any very bad advice?
I was once told, but I genuinely do not know who said this to me. A simple philosophy for business that turnover is vanity and profit is sanity. I've always said that to the salespeople that, yes, we can sell, but if we don't make money, we can't pay their wages, we can't pay the staff wages, so you have to make profits. It's we could go out and potentially increase our turnover by 50% tomorrow, but it would just purely be a vanity project to show that we have the greatest turnover. Whereas everyone knows that to continuously pay your staff, to look after people, to pay your suppliers, you have to be a profitable company. And that's always been my philosophy.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. And I'm sure you'll know that some industries have huge headline turnover figures on very tight margins, and the profit is virtually zero. And then it goes the other way as well, you know, where nearly all of the turnover is profit. But death and taxes, things we can't avoid. Tell us this. You were over in Interzoom in Germany last month, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yeah, earlier this month. Yeah.
And how did you get on?
It was fantastic to be actually back at an actual exhibition with people following COVID. All of those exhibitions were cancelled. It was a great experience to see and meet colleagues from around the world again. And the stands that we visited from our suppliers, they had obviously just completely rethought everything from, because it takes place every 2 years.
That's right.
And, you know, 2 years ago, there was no exhibition. It was a virtual one. But they completely changed the design of the stands. And they were absolutely fantastic, but it's also causing me a big headache because now I have to think about how I can redesign our showrooms. Because instead of just focusing on different displays of products, what they've done is they've put them into different living areas in the house so that, you know, it could be something, a product that could be used in a hallway or something that could be used in the utility room. And that's what we're thinking of doing with our showroom, is changing it, that we're showing same products, different applications.
Yeah, true, and a good idea to show people what a different product can do you know, it's like these people who look at a blank room and they can't visualize it with the stuff in it. And just on that, I know we discussed this before, but at some stage you had a virtual showroom, and then we got talking into computer modeling or whatever, and you said no, we have an actual showroom where you can move the furniture around and reconfigure it. Tell us about that.
Yes, basically what we have is we have built around, I think it's 65 different cabinets of all different widths, all different sizes. And every one of them is on casters and they're all counterbalanced. So the end user, some end users are very good at reading plans. Years ago, it would have been a simple 2D version. Now you can see 3D generated drawings. But the ability to come, move the cabinets around into the configuration that's on the plan so that the person can experience the gap in between, say, the wall unit and the island unit, that we have printouts of hobs and things like that that they can put down and they can see, do they have enough space between the hob and the end of the worktop? Is this a good area for preparation of food? Is it close to a bin? And they can maneuver that around. It was going, we had two options. Our customers could bring their customers to the showroom and book in and use the space there. And that was going very well. Or alternatively, if our customer was to send us the drawings, we could meet with the end user and we would move the cabinets into the various positions and then discuss with them. So that's just that area, the test drive kitchen, as we call it, is just adjacent to the sales counter. But what they can do when they're there is they can then go into the main showroom and see all the other applications that they can put into those cabinets. Something that they mightn't have thought of, like the famous one is the sink drawer that wraps around the sink, and it's a drawer that pulls out rather than having a traditional kind of hinge door in a 600 mil wide cabinet with everything just stuffed below on the bottom shelf. So that helped our customers sell more of these product innovations. Also, what we would say to them is we would have printout of sinks, and we would explain to the end user that if they are right-handed, they should have the drainer on the left. Because if you are going to be washing something, you will be holding it in your left hand because you're right-handed. You wash it with your right hand and then put your drainer to the left. And that kind of information is not something that the end user would think about when they're seeing, you know, the layout of their kitchen. So it helps the end user visualize exactly what they're going to see. And it also results in an increase in a product purchase from us by our customer, because the end user appreciate some of the applications that were shown them, and they upspend with the kitchen company. Now, unfortunately, then COVID hit, and it has been slow to get back up and running. The main reason it's slow to get back up and running is the last 18 months have been very crazy for the industry. Everyone is so busy post-COVID because all that money that was built up and people stuck at home and wanted to change their kitchens, their bedrooms, So they're all so busy. But we're starting to see now people coming back again to use it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great idea for the end user. If they're based somewhere that they can come up to your showroom, and it's great that you have the space. And when you said about, you know, the lack of use that it was getting, I was slightly concerned. Perhaps it was because you were tired of personally moving the cabinets around.
Oh, trust me, it wasn't me doing it.
Just, I want to touch on something with COVID, because you've triggered something for me. I was talking to a sales guy. You were talking about being in marketing and sales. And he said during COVID that he was absolutely stir crazy because he was so used to being on the road, and now he was confined to the house. How did you get on? Did you keep busy and out and about, or did you go slightly mad in that period as well?
Oh, I think everyone went slightly mad in that period. No, we were, because we were working with certain companies that were doing work for the HSE, we had letters from those companies whereby we were able to come into work. So I was able to come into work. Now, there wasn't a level of business to be done at the time, but I was able to come in for around 4 hours a day and just kill those 4 hours. But, you know, it was, we were really dragging the business out. We were operating on minimal staff. But it was funny, obviously, post-COVID, we had the option for working from home. Now, certain people in the company, say warehouse staff, they can't work from home, but a lot of the admin staff, marketing staff, sales staff, they can work from home. But none of them wanted to. They all came back to the into the office. Now, what it's great is, now that they're set up to work from home, if somebody has an unfortunate situation where, you know, their son or daughter is sick or something like that, and that their partner has to go to work that day, they still have the ability to stay at home and work from home. So it's worked out very well post-COVID that we now have this facility. They're all set up. They all have their laptops. They all have, you know, the telephone systems are all set up to be in contact with the office. So it's worked out well.
And just on the COVID thing and the financial crash, the financial crash for you, the 2008, seems to stick out for you. And COVID, you think maybe COVID wasn't as bad, although maybe at that stage you weren't putting on an extension or buying a building or doing something along those lines.
Well, the difference was when COVID hit, I sent a message to all the staff and I said, look, this is very similar to what's happened back in the financial crash. The difference is that back in the financial crash, we had taken out massive borrowings for the building. We don't owe that money anymore when COVID hit. And I said, and we're in the same financial situation we were back then. So with the same amount of money in the bank, you know, I said, the financial crash lasted 4 years, realistically, 4 or 5 years before we saw any growth. I said I couldn't see COVID lasting that long. Unfortunately, for several industries, it did. For the hospitality industry, it went on for, I don't know, the guts of a year, really. But for our industry, we were back within, I think, 3 months, but our customers could manufacture, but they could not go into a house to fit. Yeah. So it was another month or so thereafter. The sales team, they did find it very frustrating being stuck at home, because they're out on the road all the time and basically then having to sit at home. And a lot of customers, even though they were open again, didn't want salespeople coming in. They were happy to have individual appointments for end users, which is perfectly acceptable because they're the ones that's going to be spending money with them. But they didn't want their time necessarily taken up by salespeople coming in. So it was a very, very difficult time for the sales team. But thankfully, you know, we seem to be back to normal now. Everyone's just getting on with it.
Well, some of us are normal and others aren't.
Yeah.
just without being clairvoyant, and I mean, we don't know when the next 08 is going to happen or the next COVID is going to happen. But tell us, you know, having been to Interzoom and things getting up and moving, as you say, and there's a bit of momentum out there, what sort of expectations do you have for the industry, like, moving forward?
At the moment, what we're hearing from an awful lot of our customers is that some of the site work that had been suspended is starting to come back now, and it'll be kicking in July or August. So optimistic that's going to be growth there. The one thing that happened during COVID in terms of all of our suppliers, any of the products that they were going to launch back 3 years ago were all put on hold because of the absolute boom that was going on with existing products, and the supply chains had to be kept open for them. So a lot of the product that was scheduled for the last 2 years, 2 to 3 years, is now all coming available now. So as a result, we have a massive amount of new products that we're going to be launching, which will allow us to diversify the product range and find new users for new products. So in that sense, I'm very happy and I'm very positive about what the future holds. I genuinely don't think there will be another 2008 crash, because there was so many things. Like, the central bank had just let spending get completely out of control. I was at the beginning. Here's another example of me with bad timing. I moved out of my house on, I think it was the Wednesday. And on a Friday, the first lockdown was announced. I was moving out because my house was being renovated and an extension put onto it. And at that stage, I was talking to the bank about a possible mortgage what I was planning to do. And I thought, absolutely no problem. You know, I can go to the bank and I can get the money that I need. And a valuer came back and gave this absolute crazy value on my house. Similar value that had been done about 7 years ago. So the bank, I said to myself, look, I can threaten, you know, I'm going to pull the company's accounts away from them. I'm going to do everything. And they would not give me what I was looking for, no matter what I said. Now, back in 2007, 2008, you could walk into a bank and you could get any money you wanted. You know, the amount of people that had properties all over the world, just based on lending from the banks. That hasn't happened now. They've become so strict in terms, some would actually say, and I would say it as well, too strict. You know, it makes no sense that somebody is paying 2,000 euro rent and they have to build up 20 or 30% of their deposit on a house, and the mortgage is going to cost them 1,500. Why not just let them build up 10% if the mortgage is then going to be still less than what they're paying in rent? It makes no sense, you know. So they've gone too far the other way, but I don't think they'll ever go back to lending the way they did. Thankfully, well, hopefully they won't.
Unfortunately, it's a very Irish thing. We go very far one way, and then we come all the way back, and we don't stop in the middle. I mean, I had a friend in 2008. It was before 2008. He was buying houses like you'd buy chocolate bars, you know, and building up a portfolio and all of them interest only. I mean, that kind of thing is gone now. I mean, the banks have people, you know, to the pin of their collar for trying to get money out of them.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Thankfully, we don't need to borrow from them now, you know.
and touch wood, you won't have to in the future either.
Yeah, true.
So listen, I know.
Excuse me, sorry.
No, you're quite all right. I think business, I mean, COVID and notwithstanding, but just in general, to be an owner manager, you know, it can kind of be a lonely place, which is partly what Iwin is about. You know, when you're stuck on a Friday afternoon with some problem, you know, who do you call? And you can call one of the network or a colleague. But apart from obviously Iwin, who I have to say are marvelous, who else or what are the sort of network of support do you rely on?
Well, to be honest with you, I have fantastic staff. If I'm not here, or if there's a problem occurring, there's always somebody here to look after the problem. John Dolan, who is my chief operations officer, he's with the company 38 years. Marie Kelly, she's in accounts, is with the company 37 years. We have very, very low staff turnover. Everyone has been, you know, we look after them, but they give it back to us. And that has worked out very well. And then I'd have to say, because I think she'd kill me if I didn't, my wife has been an absolute fantastic support. Marie has been there with me from the very beginning, when I started with the company, and has been there when I became managing director, CEO, all the way along, and she has supported me. So I'd like to say thank you to her.
Okay, well, I think you're right to do so. It's very often, I would imagine, your job involves long hours and there's a balancing act, and to have somebody there to support you is very, very helpful.
Well, I'm sure it's very difficult for her listening to me at 9 o'clock at night rambling on about a new hinge. So.
Well, maybe she stops listening at a certain time.
maybe you stopped listening several years ago, actually.
Well, listen, tell me this, just a point you made there in terms of your staff as well, and great that you've acknowledged them, but having your low staff turnover must be an absolute credit to you as well. I mean, it must say something about you personally as a manager and as a business. Not everybody has that, you know?
Well, I always recognise that you want to have your staff with you a very long time. So we've always put in place policies that would encourage that. So the longer they stay with us, the more holidays they get. They have pension funds, they've income continuation, they've extended sick pay, that they can, if they don't use up, I think it's 8 days within the year sick, they can carry them forward again for the following year, and they can keep doing that. So that if they get to 40 days, then I think that's the maximum they can have in terms of sick pay. But the idea is that, God forbid, somebody gets very sick, that they're completely paid while they're out. So we've always, we have great people. Some of the guys that we have on the sales team studied in Letterfrack, which is now ATU. It was, you know, and great technical knowledge. All the guys have come from within the industry in terms of the salespeople. We have five people here who are much younger than me, who we are planning as part of a succession team to take over from myself and John. And basically, there's Debbie in marketing, there's Kevin in finance, we've got Tom, you know, we've got Carl in digital marketing, and then we've got Craig, who's going to be, Tom and Craig are probably going to be involved in product development with me. And it's, after doing this for 30 odd years, it will be very difficult for them to come in and learn everything and expect to know everything that myself and John know, have learned over the last 30 odd years. So we're figuring we're starting with them now, and we'll train them over the next 5 or 6 years to eventually move into roles to replace us.
Well, again, that's great that you're planning that as well, because again, it's not something that everybody does, you know. I don't know, is it something they don't want to think about, or I know people are very busy, so it doesn't come up, you know. But it's great that you're thinking forward anyway.
Well, it was actually, what happened was, we were over at an event in Austria, and somebody asked Ronan, the sales manager for the company, what was the age profile like in the company, and he answered whatever it was, and he was telling me this story, and I said, God, yeah, we're very young. And then he kind of went, no, we're not. And he started pointing out what ages we were. And I kind of went, okay, I need to start planning this. So thankfully we have something in plan now. And the five guys and Debbie are very good at what they're doing.
Good, good. Well, I think I've probably taken up enough of your time, Paul. And but I have to say, thank you so much for talking to me, and for also for having a bit of humor as well, because we like to work hard and have a bit of fun at the same time.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for having me. I genuinely appreciate it, and the best of luck to everyone in Iwin. Very proud to be associated with you guys.
Thank you so much, Paul. Okay, much appreciated. Good luck. Cheers.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.